Welcome back to episode 114 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here on Chess Journeys, we love exploring the glories of rating gain, but we also dive into the more realistic, the plateaus, and perhaps even the pits of despair below that. If you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon Chess Journeys. And I do want to thank our queen level supporters, Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Donna Rich Burgess, Brandon Halsey, David Schreiber, Lindsay Newhall, Jeff Peterson, Tobias Rex, Bob Berger, Nicholas Harrigan, Rich Bradley Fenner, Fletcher Ray, Sherrod, and our king level supporter, Ian Samples. I've been streaming occasionally on Dr. Skull _ Tiny Grime, so you'll have to kind of follow that if you want to see when it goes live. Could be anytime, who knows? If you want to support the show, you can DM me on Twitter. You can fill out the Google form in the show notes. We all want to hear your story. And if you're interested in Noel Studer's next level training program, you can use the code in the show notes to support the show. You get a great training program. You know, the show gets a little bit of help. Everyone wins. But today I want to bring in our guest of the day. We have Will. He's an adult improver. He's a special education teacher, an audiobook enthusiast, and a chess club organizer. Will, welcome to the show. And have you had a chance to play any chess yet today?
See, I haven't been able to play today. I've been able to go over a game.
Okay. What does that mean? Go over your own game or go over like a master game?
Oh, I'll go over a master game. I don't want to go over my own games. that requires too much self-criticism. Not ready for that.
Oh, interesting. Do you analyze your games then when you're done with them, or do you just kind of let them go?
Oh, I analyze them.
Okay.
Yeah, if my usual routine is to play a 30-0 chess.com game and then analyze it. And then for any tournaments I go to thoroughly analyze those games.
Okay. So you analyze your games. You're just not big on like going over them later for fun.
No, I don't go over them for fun. No, okay. It's not quite the same as going over a comic block a game.
Yeah, I hear you. I actually have a collection of games I call my cleanest games. And every now and then when I'm really playing bad, my coach will be like, Hey, go look at one of your good games. Just remind yourself, like, you can play good chess. So every now and then I'll go look at an old game of mine as like a pick-me-up, but it's pretty rare.
That's a great idea, actually. I've never thought of doing that. Because I have a few games where I look at it and I go, did I really play this move?
Nice. Yeah. Those are the games you want to look at and remind yourself. Yeah, I'm actually really good at this. Yes, I did blunder 9 pieces in this game, but in this other game, I was great.
This other game was 97% accuracy.
Yeah, exactly. Which is also funny, by the way. I have the exact same thought as you do. Like, I'll play a game, and I'll be like, that was a great game. And the computer will be like, 86%. And I'm like, okay, I guess it was just a good game. And then I'll be like, that was a whatever game. The computer's like, it's 97%. And I'm like, oh, it's my greatest game. Man, that computer really influences me.
But like, how? Yeah, the computer completely changes my mind about some games, because some games I thought that were amazing, or that I played that game like an endgame god, and then find out that I made like 5 inaccuracies in like 6 moves.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so hard, especially in a game where there were some really wild tactics that we both missed. I don't know. I'm not a GM, so I don't know. Would a GM just glance at that and be like, you guys are fools. Of course you should have caught that. Or is that like the computer digging into the recesses of its amazing calculation to find it? So I don't know. It's a mystery. Well, William, I'm curious. How did you get into chess? When did you pick it up?
It was about 2016. I was playing, I was just hanging out with some friends, and then one friend had a chess board, and I had learned how to play the game when I was young. And I played with my family, but I didn't have anybody to play with beyond that. So then I sort of just stopped playing.
Question, were you good in your family, or was like a parent dominating you? How was your family structure with chess?
I was better than all of my cousins and my like sister, but I never beat my father.
Ooh, okay. He was the final boss.
I still haven't beat him. The last time I played him was year like years ago, and I took all his pieces, and he stalemated. So I still haven't beat him.
Oh no! Is it because now he refuses to play you?
Oh yeah, now he just won't. He just won't.
Yeah, that's smart. As a father, yeah. I would be the same way. I'd be like, "Oh, I stalemated you. You're clearly better than me. We will never play again."
Yeah, now he would just never agree to it.
Okay.
But my friend, I said, "Oh yeah, I'm good at chess," and then we played. He beat me, and then my self-esteem, ego, what have you, did not let that rest with my soul. And then I immediately went to chess YouTube. Started learning things, started looking at John Bartholomew videos, looking up openings, and then I made a chess.com profile, and then I was hooked. I was done. And then I immediately went to go murder that friend in chess. And then I never looked back, and then it just kept going. It just kept feeding itself. And then during that time, the 2016 World Championship happened to be going on, and I started watching the streams, and I just thought, wow, this game is so much deeper than what I possibly conceived, even the history of it. Mm-hmm. And then I was hooked.
Okay. Was it something hooked. Like about the commentary of the match that kind of drew you in, of like them talking about the history, or was it just sort of the moves itself?
It was the moves. At first I was just utterly astounded at the concept of an opening.
Oh, okay.
I just didn't see the idea of, I was like, okay, well, this random configuration of pieces is the Roy Lopez. And I was like, well, surely they haven't figured out all the other moves, right?
Yeah.
Surely they know that you could just move a piece randomly and it would be okay. And no. I didn't even have the concept of how deeply scoped out the game was.
Gotcha.
So the idea of an opening where, you know, you have Roy Lopez or Sicilian or Carol Khan, and that certain configurations for the pieces are just better. Completely just astounded me. I was dumbfounded.
So you just thought, like, we just move whatever we feel like. We're creative at the beginning. I'm creating something new each game.
Yeah, I did. I thought it was... Yeah, you create something new, and then somebody wins.
Yeah.
And then I found out there are principles, there are stages to the evolution of the game. Gotcha. You have different player styles, types, world championships, controversies. I spent a lot of time on Wikipedia.
Okay. I'm curious, who are you rooting for in this world championship? Are you rooting for Carlsen, or are you rooting for Kerryakin?
At the time, I didn't even know enough to have a bias. I guess at the time I was pro Carlsen because I liked the way that his style of play was described.
Ah, okay.
And my first introduction into world-class players were players who are more offensive-minded. And so Kerryakin didn't really fit that mold.
Okay.
Now I have a different respect for them, like Petrosian and Korchnoi. But before, I didn't really have that. My first introduction into chess players from great players from history was Mikhail Tile.
Okay.
And after that, I was, you know, you don't come back from that.
Yeah, right, right. You're like, all right, so here's what you do. You try to sack as many pieces as you can before you win.
Literally.
That's how my daughter plays. She very much just like, will just sack a knight and a bishop. And I'm like, what was that? And she's like, they were in the way. And I'm like, they were in the way? They're in the way. Yeah, they're in the way. So it's quite interesting. All right, I got to talk to you about openings. This is what happened to me at school this week. It was great. So every now and then some student will be like, hey, we should play a game of chess. I hear you're good. And I'm like, okay. And this student chose to play like in an area with 50 other kids that were kind of interested in chess. And so they were all screaming stuff the whole time. It was wild. It was all about openings, right? So like I played the Caro Kann and one kid's like, yeah, he's doing it. It's my opening. And this other kid was like, why is he playing the Caro Kann? Doesn't he know it can't do anything? And I was like, what is happening here? None of you know, are any good at chess. Why are you so obsessed with openings? Like they all know all the names of the openings, but they're all rated like 600. And I'm like, I don't mind that you're rated 600, but why don't you spend time learning how to play chess rather than like trying to memorize the name of every opening? It's a very weird thing to me.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, the more I began to play, the less and less I liked the study of openings.
Okay.
And now I'm mainly at the beginning though I was obsessed with really just learning all the names.
Yeah. I think it makes you feel like you know something.
Yeah, but once I realized that if you're going to learn an opening, you have to know it so deeply that you almost have to have a intuitive understanding of what's good or what's not when you see a move in that opening.
Yeah.
And if you're not there, then you probably should either keep studying it or just not play it.
Yeah, I hear you. Or are you saying like play by just chess principles rather than trying to memorize moves?
Yeah,
it is the biggest danger, right? Is when you're like in that newer phase with an opening, or like you're saying, you don't know all the nuances, you memorized a bunch of lines, and then you're like, this feels like the wrong move, but I remember from my chessable course it's the right move. That's the moment to be like, whoa, are you sure about that? Are you sure you're not confusing lines here?
Are you sure? The authors on Chessable don't always tell you that you shouldn't just make the moves because you remember them. You should also know why they're good. Like
exactly.
Yeah, that's tough. Not quite.
Okay.
So I'm going to play it.
So going back in time just a bit, you play this friend of yours. You defeat them. You get on chess.com. What is that first rating looking like for you? Are you prodigy? Are you like 1,800 out of the gate? What are we looking at here?
Oh, I was like 600.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah, an easy 600 everywhere across the board.
Okay. So you're like a real 600, and now you've got the chess bug, and you're like, I want to get better.
Yeah, went from 600, and then went from 600. Then I started going to a chess club.
Oh, okay. When is this? Is this like around the 2016, or did it take you a little while to get out to a chess club?
Oh, yeah, it was around 2016. I went to a chess club that I'm still a member of now called RVA Pieces in Richmond, Virginia.
Oh, that's cool. What motivated you to get out to a chess club? Because I feel like a lot of people, they get online, they start playing, they're a little nervous to like play with other real humans in person. What allowed you to just say, this is what I want to do?
I've just always been very competitive, and so I wanted to just have that feeling of playing against somebody in person. And the idea didn't really make me nervous because I was entranced by the idea of just entering this chess world.
Okay.
That's and this cool. is pre-Queen's Gambit even, so I was just it was just my thing for a while.
That's cool. And how'd it go? Were you like around 600? You went in and beat everybody?
Oh, no, I got destroyed. I got destroyed. I got destroyed, but it did not bother me in the slightest.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. That's important, right? You can take the loss and be like, these people are just better than me. Were you able to learn anything from them?
Oh, yeah, I learned. Learned a lot about just first game etiquette. I was so disturbed by the fact that people would take your piece before they actually put their piece there in the beginning.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I thought that was so strange because I had no concept of chess etiquette whatsoever.
Okay.
So I was like, how do you even know that your move is correct? That doesn't even make sense. Not even understanding that if you play chess that much, you know,
yeah,
you know what you're doing.
Right, right. You're like, your bishop can't even hit that square. And they're like,
yeah, what? He can't even hit that square. What is that square's name anyway?
That's great.
But yeah, and then I got better. And I would always try to find ways to play against the better players at the club. And I would just, every game, try to learn something new or just lose in less spectacular fashion.
Okay. How did you go about trying to learn from those games? Because I think that's so critical, being able to learn from our losses. Were you like asking them questions? Were you just kind of processing what went wrong?
I would ask questions about why did you do that instead of that. And then after the games, I would think about them or the critical moments. And right around that time, I bought Capablanca's Chess Fundamentals.
Oh, okay.
The book. And I just learned some basic king and pawn endgames, which some result revolutionized my game.
Yeah.
It's amazing what basics can do.
It really is.
And then I got solid in a few openings.
Okay.
And I started doing tactics more regularly. The only issue was that my introduction to the game was mainly through blitz chess.
Okay.
But I did more tactics regularly. I started buying books, and then I made an effort to play longer time controls.
Okay. So you're getting an opening repertoire, even if it's just a basic one. You're working on your tactics. You're getting the fundamentals of the end game down. Sounds like you've got the keys. Where did just getting those fundamentals take you, say, like ratings wise?
To about 1200 rapidchess.com, and then I hit a plateau. It was devastating.
Horrid plateaus.
Yeah, that like 1200 to like 1300 plateau on chess.com is like, it's ridiculous. At least I thought it was then, because now I couldn't fathom like finding that difficult.
Okay.
But before, it was like, I thought that 1500 players, like, they never make mistakes. 1600, 17, they never make, they like, they'll make one mistake.
Yeah.
And it took me a lot of working on my metacognitive process and thinking process. And having it be extremely consistent, or at least more consistent than it had been.
Okay, interesting. What do you mean by that? So you're stuck at 1200, you read some books, you're stuck, and you're working on your thinking process. What does that mean for us? Break that down for us.
So in order to illustrate that, let me say, before I broke that 1200 to 1200-ish barrier, I got to like 1350, and then I went back down.
Ooh.
Before I sort of broke up, and now I'm at, I actually like tilted a little bit. I was at 1600, and then I tilted to 1520. But yeah, I've also been experimenting in a way.
That's cool.
So I'm all okay with that. So yeah, now I'm in like 1520s. I'll probably try to win a game today and get to like 1530. But what that looks like, before, I would just make my moves intuitively. I would see a move, see what the opponent did, and then I would just sort of, I wouldn't even mentally narrate my thoughts. I would just look at the move, have a feeling about it, and then move.
Oh, wow. That got you to 1200? That's very impressive. Okay.
Yeah, which made me think that I had decent intuition, which is terrible. Like the worst idea that I ever read about, that you can have intuitive players at 1200. But no.
Okay. And at this point, then, were you mostly playing blitz, or were you sort of transitioning now to the more rapid time controls?
And I started transitioning to the more rapid time controls, and then I basically At a certain point, I just basically stopped playing Blitz, except when I played in person.
Okay.
And then I looked up, I followed essentially two thinking models, and I went from Jacob Augard's three questions. Okay. So for every move, I would ask myself these three questions: what is my opponent doing? What are the weaknesses in the position? What is my worst place piece? And I would ask that for every single move. And that got me pretty much to like 1400.
Oh, wow.
And then I took that a step further, and then I bought a chessable course from Candidate Master Azul Chua, and it was called Calculation for a Guide for Tournament Players or something like that.
The Burger Method. That's a good course. That's a very good course.
Yeah, and I adopted that for every move of my games, and it just changed the entire. It changed the entire accuracy of my play.
Wow. All right. Well, help illuminate our audience. I don't remember the steps of the Burger Method. So what are the steps again? What are you using in your games?
So step one, calculate the material. The material will tell you what you need to do. So if you're down material, you probably need to regain that material. If you're down too much material, then you probably need to start complicating or start going for a maining attack, depending on the position of your pieces. And then noting the positional imbalances. There's some stuffy in here. Oh, that's great. Okay. So then next step, you are going to look for defended and undefended pieces or hanging and undefended pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a revolutionary idea for me because The way he explained it, I never thought to target pieces that had defenders.
Okay.
Because I thought, it's defended, why attack it? I should attack something that's not defended at all. But once you get past a certain level, everybody's defending something.
Yeah.
Your players aren't just leaving pieces hanging. So you need to look for pieces that have the most potential for being hanging.
Yeah, it's a really cool concept he has that he calls it undefended if it's defended once and you're already attacking it once. Because then now if you add a second attacker, it's undefended. And so it is a cool concept that it's undefended even if it's defended.
Yeah, and mind-blowing. And then looking for mating opportunities, then looking for mating opportunities, then I skipped X-ray attacks. But I feel like X-ray attacks you can look for inside of the next category, which is motifs.
Yeah.
Then critical lines and squares. Then there was trappable pieces. And then you have pattern internalization essentials. And then you do the Burger Method from your opponent's perspective.
Wait. So here's my question. Are you actually doing all of this for every single move? Because that seems like so much. Or have you pared it down somehow for yourself when you sort of, go to make your moves?
I wish I could do it every move, but I'm not as disciplined as I would like to be.
Okay.
And a part of that is, honestly, large part of it is rehearsing the actual steps to myself so that I can say them quicker in my head without actually having to recall them.
Okay, nice. Yeah. I think I've taken a lot of that where like each move I try to look at the motifs on the board to see, what's available, the loose and undefended pieces. And then my coach has added another one for me personally, which is the move too fancy? For some reason, I keep doing this thing where like I'm winning and I go for some super fancy move. And he's like, just make the regular move, man. Stop trying to be fancy. All the fancy moves you make lose. You're the worst fancy move maker ever. So trying to cut that out of my game as much as I can.
That's hilarious. I had to learn that lesson the hard way during my last tournament, actually. Yeah. But I was, yeah. Like, look for the move that causes, now I call that whenever I'm about to do like that fancy move, I'm like, is this something you need to do or something you want to do?
Yeah. What I'm worried is
something you want to do. Now, before I make a move that I want to do, I leave the board.
Oh, nice. Okay.
I leave the board and I go and say to myself, let's think about this. Is this something you want to see happen or is it something that needs to happen?
That's
and then I come back to the board. And usually by then I can look at the board with clearer eyes.
Oh, okay. Okay. Good idea. Yeah, my last tournament, it was like I had this decision to make where like I had to protect this square, right? And so I could have done it just by moving the bishop, which is like the obvious move. I didn't even look for that move because I found some super fancy move where it was like, he takes, and then I do this pin thing, and then I do a discovery, and like all this cool stuff. My coach is like, you didn't even look for just move the bishop to there? And I was like, no, man, because I found an awesome move. I didn't think I should look for a simple move.
Found something cool.
Exactly.
Doing it for the fans.
Oh, man, it can be tough. Okay, so you've redone your whole thinking process, it sounds like. First, you adopted Agard's questions. Now you've gone deeper with the Berger method and the calculation for, I think it's called like tournament chess players. What did that do to your rating? Did you get out of your 1200 plateau then?
Oh yeah. I went from basically like 1350 to like 1600.
Nice.
And now I'm running into the process of, I have this weird thing where like once I reach a new height, I'll sort of try to cash in on it.
What does that mean?
And I'll start playing lower time controls because I'm like, well, I've consolidated that growth. I don't need to keep trying to make it better.
Oh, I see.
So I went from like doing like 30-minute games or like 60-minute games to 10-minute rapid games on chess.com.
Huh. Okay.
And so my thought process will like deteriorate, or I'd start playing more blitz. And a large part of it is now. Because I can tell the difference when I play longer games more consistently.
Yeah.
Because the quality of my moves, and I look specifically for like my statistics are that I mainly look for are like number of inaccuracies and mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to cut those down. I'm not looking for brilliance or brilliant moves or best moves. I'm looking for more accuracies, mistakes, and blunders. And the more I cut down on those, in general, the better my play just seems to be.
Yeah, I agree. At our level, it doesn't seem to be about making brilliancies. It's about not messing up with huge blunders.
Yeah. And so now I've gotten out of that phase of cashing in.
Okay.
And going back to my regular study routine / comprehensive playing routine.
Okay. And what is your study routine these days?
So my study routine is essentially, my goal is to read all 10 of the Yusupov books.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which I'm in the second book now, and it's hard. And
it is.
Yes. Yeah, I was so proud of myself for, I'm on chapter 7 of the second Yusupov book, and I'm so proud of myself for actually solving one puzzle that was like a 3-star.
Ooh.
And if you've ever solved any of Yusupov puzzles, you know that those are essentially like,
yeah,
almost impossible. Not really, but
yeah, for our level, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and that one of the things that I took away from, in general, when you're calculating, because those books are just free calculation clinics, essentially,
mm-hmm.
is instead of picking a move, I now go, before I even start to calculate a move, I go, is this forcing?
Okay.
If this is forcing, then I should keep calculating. If it's not, then I need to find a good reason for why I think my opponent's move is going to be compelled by mine.
Oh, yeah. That's another weakness of mine. I often do not find my opponent's best move. Like you said, like if it's not forcing, I'm like, okay, I'll go here, then they'll go here. And my coach is like, whoa, in what world are they going there? And I was like, I don't know. And he's like, that's their fifth best move, and it's terrible. And I'm like, yeah, but I win in that line.
But yeah, like my study routine is now that all 10 of these pop books, I'm on book two.
Nice.
Konstantin Chernyshov's Cognitive Chess, which is revolutionizing my just entire the level of my visualization skill, and going through a series of my favorite players' games and game compilation books. So right now I'm going through The Immortal Games of Capablanca by Fred Reinfeldt, and I'm at about game, I think like 90 something. So I'm almost done with that book. And then I'm going to take a step backward and go through Paul Morphy's Move by Move, and then I'm going to go to Rubenstein Move by Move.
Okay. Why'd you choose Capablanca to start with, especially as a Tal fan?
I realized a long time ago that you should study the kinds of players that don't naturally attract you.
Oh, okay.
And at first I thought that the more I studied Capablanca's games, the more I gained a respect for players who play in a positional style. And I've always found that an attractive quality in a player, in that they're stable. And not just stable, but also measured and capable of making good decisions in positionally controversial places. It's almost, it's similar to like one of my other passions, which is soccer. And I played soccer in college, and I played all throughout my life. And at first I was an attacking player. But as I got older and got an appreciation more for the mechanics of the game and how the game is controlled, I started admiring midfield players more because they control the game.
Gotcha.
And so it's in a similar vein. I just love the smoothness and the economy of positional players like Capablanca, your Capablancas, your Rubensteins, your Ruben Fiennes, Smyslov, and the like.
Okay, and in that,
so I still love other types of players too.
Gotcha. And in that admiration, did you feel like that changed your own playing style as well, or is it more like, no, I'm still gonna sack when I can?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah, and it coincided with like my push from like 1500 to 1600. On chess.com, because the one thing about playing in a fantastical manner is that it sort of blinds you to making obvious good moves.
Okay, yeah.
And after like reading a couple Bach again, like I would notice for like, okay, he's using the pawns this way. It made me see that playing a game to literally just make a pawn weak, sacrificing a pawn to make a pawn weak is a great idea.
Yeah.
There's nothing like sacrificing your B pawn so you can get doubled A pawns, because that's something that they're going to have to defend for the entirety of the end game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
nor would they really be able to promote.
Probably you're getting more end games now too. So have you had to go a little deeper in your end game study then?
Oh yeah. Okay. Oh yeah. And now the end game it's one of my favorite parts of the game, where before I would run out of steam and just not care. Now I love to like cultivate an end game that I find to be strategically interesting or just dead even, and I'll try to play it.
Okay. That sounds like the Capablanca method. Get an even end game and then crush your opponent. What resources have you been using to work on your end game skills?
Definitely. Let's see. See, I really like to just use the game compilations as well as right now I'm going in my Chessable. I have 100 endgames you must know, but I'm literally only studying the basic endgames in there until I have them down pat.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So I haven't expanded past a certain number because I want to have the other ones just so down packed that it's essentially nothing for me to even intuitively do them. And then Silman's and complete endgame course.
Okay. Yeah. I agree with that one for sure.
Rest in peace.
Broken down by Pat Bans. Yeah. It's hard to believe he passed away. I didn't even realize he was ill.
Yeah, when I saw that, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. I mean, I've just been waiting for more Silman books, but now we know that wait won't happen. That's really sad. You mentioned a book a few minutes ago called Cognitive Chess, and you said it was transformative. I've never even heard of this book, so help me out. What is Cognitive Chess?
Man, so it's written by this grandmaster called named Konstantin Chernyshev, and it's an endgame visualization book. Oh. Well, not endgame visualization book. It's a visualization book that it's essentially 500 pages of just visualization work.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm on step one of the book, but it's changed the entire quality of my visualization in a way that I didn't even conceive was possible.
Wow.
Because I would always, one thing about my chess improvement is that I'm a serial researcher. I'm always looking for the slightest bit of improvements. It's just in my nature. In that weird way, I'm almost never satisfied with anything, even if it's the best.
Okay.
And one thing I really wanted to work on was my ability to, I want to be able to read a chess book without having a board in front of me.
Yeah, I would love to be there.
And because I was looking up ways to just jumpstart my improvement. And one thing I noticed in reading accounts about Carlsen, Kasparov, not to say that I'm anywhere close to them, but is that they can read chess books without actually having a board in front of them. But I don't think that's an unattainable ability. It's just one that requires work. So then I went and looked up the book Blindfold Chess, the book on the history of blindfold chess, and looked up the sort of the metacognitive mechanics of it. And a lot of it is just your players that can play and read these books blindfold is they have an exceptional understanding of the relationships between the squares on the board.
Okay.
So that's knowing that because bishop g2 will put your bishop opposite of a8, that's a light square.
Okay. Yeah.
And vice versa, and knowing that e4, that B, D, F, and H files will be the opposite in terms of color than the other files.
Right.
And that. So the book, the premise of the book is essentially, it'll give you a blindfold problem, and you're supposed to solve it without the sight of the board.
Okay.
So it starts off with king is on a8. White pawn is on a7. Black king is on a6. Black to move or white to move or whatever.
Sure. Okay. So pretty straightforward, but getting you sort of used to the premise of doing blindfold work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That sounds cool. And so it looks like I just looked up the book real quick, so I'm so fascinated. So it looks like it's divided into levels, and you said you are on level one. Does level one, what player do you think level one is manageable for? Does it feel like it scales pretty far down to like 1200 or below 1200?
I say level one can be managed by about your intermediate player, your intermediate to late beginner player.
Okay. That's cool.
And then levels 2, 3, 4, and 5, they just get progressively more difficult. So it'll have like the pieces on the board, and then it'll give you like 5 moves.
Right.
And then have you ask you to evaluate the position.
Oh wow, okay.
which is something that if you're reading a book or you're even calculating, that's something you're going to do in a game.
Yeah, exactly.
But doing that without the sight of a board would make that skill just infinitely better.
Yeah.
It would make certain bits of calculation almost inconsequential to you.
Yeah. And that's one of the hardest and most important skills, right, is to be able to calculate even two or three moves and then be able to accurately assess what's happening. Not just find the three move mate, right? But like a regular position, if these three moves happen, evaluation, who's winning? And that can be very challenging.
Yeah, so I've been daily going through those exercises, and I've noticed, along with that, I've been doing the chessable course visualize.
Oh, okay.
To complement that, and I've noticed a quality in the level of my calculation. Like for one Yusupov puzzle that was like 3 stars, I was able to calculate like a 7 move, which is really like 14 moves, like calculation, like puzzle. And it was the longest I'd ever calculated, but it was completely accurate.
Impressive.
Which I would have never even considered before grabbing that book, but also doing that work on that visualization as a skill.
Gotcha. So you feel like you're seeing working on visualization has really directly impacted your ability to calculate better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. It feels like that's a skill that's less about knowledge and more about actual doing, which is the chess, right? It's like you can read in the entirety of 100 endgames you must know from front to back in 2 days, and then you'll know nothing. Like, you'll have some knowledge floating around, but you can't do any of them.
Yeah, you'll have knowledge, but you won't have skill.
Yeah, exactly. So this feels like
chess is a game of skill, weirdly. Yeah, and knowledge.
Feels like this is helping your skill. So that's really fascinating. I think I'm going to dive into that a bit myself. I had been doing some visualization, and I have the visualization chessable course, and it's really good. I agree.
It's amazing.
It's a great course. It's one of those things of there's too many good things, right? Like, I did about half the course and then I just forgot about it. And the other day I was like, wait, I never finished this. This course is amazing. What is wrong with me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, for openings, I use Chessable, but now I had like a weird epiphany about Chessable. Openings on Chessable are great, but you need to learn a few lines from an opening that you're doing, and you can do it just with any of the free short and sweet courses. Mm-hmm. Learn them, have them down pat, play with them, and then come back and redo the entire course, and your entire concept of the opening will be completely changed, because some of those lines you will have been playing but run into different problems with each one. Oh. And the author's solutions or their ideas will now make so much more sense.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so you're saying like now it's learning a solution to a problem that's easier to remember than just blindly learning hundreds of lines that you have no idea what the relevance is, and it's harder to keep track of them.
Yeah, because I took Sarath Narayan's Catalan short and sweet course.
Okay.
And I hope I pronounced his name correctly. Grandmaster Sarath Narayan. But and I went through the entire chessable course. Knew the lines, had them down pat, and did well with them. But then the more I played with them, I started running into certain problems, started developing my own sort of ideas about them. Mm-hmm. And then I took the course, and then I started going through the course again. And certain moves that before, you know, when you go on a review, you'd be like, I don't know what this is. And then I would naturally make the move because it would seem like the move that makes the most sense for that position, because I've been playing it for months.
Yeah, I hear you. I've had a similar experience going through some of those courses where it's like the first time I went through, I was just memorizing and trying not to get it wrong. And now that I've been playing the same openings for months and months going through the courses, now it's more of like, do I agree with your decision, or there, I have another course and I can actually think about them now and be like, ooh, I think this is one I want to memorize, rather than just being like, all right, download the information into my brain. I have no idea what you're saying, but I'm going to try to remember it all. Yeah, I think I agree with that a lot. Makes a big difference. What is your amount of time you're able to spend? It sounds like you're doing a lot of really serious work, which is not to try to take on adult improvers, but it feels like a lot of us adult improvers, you do the easy things. Like, I did a bunch of Puzzle Rush and I did this, and then I did a tiny bit of calculation. It sounds like you're like really tackling hard things like deep calculation, 30-minute games. Are you able to spend a lot of time then every day doing your chess, or what is your time commitment looking like?
About, I'd say really about 2 hours a day.
Okay.
And it's really just, now that I have my chess cave, because I just moved into my house, and it's just, like, you know that closet from Harry Potter that he lived in the first movie? It's just like that.
Oh, okay.
But it has a window.
Oh, okay, that's pretty cool. So you got your chess closet with a window. And is that just your area? Like, if people know, like, when you go into the chess cave, don't mess with Will?
Yeah, essentially. And yeah, so I would just section out my chess study time. So I would spend, I've had different philosophies on going through game collections, but now I think that after I went through a brief crisis of faith, when I heard about Willy Hendrick's Move First, Think Later.
Oh, okay.
But it was very informative. And now, at first, I was going to do it, like, let me take 4 hours to go through this one couple block game.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that will take like a few days.
Yeah.
And it greatly transforms your understanding. But I think now it's more important to observe a wealth of positions and get used to just comparing your ideas to those master ideas and sort of building that intuitive sense. And I got this idea for, I'm pretty sure you've interviewed him, but Bruce Neal. I actually DM'd him and asked him yesterday, because he's just going through game collections like like Pop-Tarts.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, now trying to go through a few games a day, reviewing some games that I've been going through, or the games that I've memorized, because there are some games that I just want to keep up in there.
Ooh, nice. How do you decide you want to memorize a game? I have no games memorized, not even one.
I have maybe three games memorized.
Nice. Okay.
There are some moves that I'm fuzzy on, but I chose based on mainly whether the game was instructive for me. So one game that I chose to memorize was Vasilev Vancha, who's my favorite player, versus Maxime Vachier-Lagrov from 2012. Hmm. And I found it instructive because it's a Sicilian Nydorf game, and the only reason it's very memorable for me remains around the fact that Maxime Vachier-Lagrov is known as a Nydorf specialist.
Mm-hmm.
Vasil has a knight c5 sacrifice in the game.
Huh?
He castles kingside and then proceeds to win the game.
And he
it's amazing. I would say go look at it. It's awesome.
Okay. So you're choosing the games you're memorizing because they're awesome. They have an instructive moment that really resonates with you, and you want to make sure you remember it.
Yeah, and then there's Capablanca versus Teichmann, which was it really made me see just how far ahead of his competition Capablanca was, because it's a game that leads to an opposite bishops. Opposite colored bishops endgame,
mm-hmm.
but Teichmann never looks like he's ever going to win this game, ever. And it's only, there's no large changes in material. It's just one player is understanding the position so much better than the other player. And that's the merit that the game is won on. I love that game. And then Let's see, Capablanca Teichman. Capablanca versus Stein. Capablanca Teichman, I think, was 1913. And then Capablanca Steiner, which is, I think, 19, it's either 28 or 29. But yeah, and it's just Capablanca Steiner making a few subpar moves in the opening, and then Capablanca just obliterating him after that.
That's cool. Yeah, I think if I had, I was working on memorizing some games from Capablanca and Karpov, and I thought I kind of had them, but I'm realizing now I just don't. Like, if I don't keep refreshing them, I lose them. So I'm sure I could get them back at least partially. But yeah, it sounds like a worthy endeavor that I should probably try out. Have you played any like USCF tournaments yet?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so when did you start
Yeah,
playing tournaments?
I just started playing tournaments last year.
Oh wow! So what took so long? How can you just
I was so scared.
Wow, that's amazing. What was your chess.com rating then when you decided to play your first tournament?
Like 15, like maybe like 1400.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so you were a very skilled chess player before you first showed up for your first tournament. What made you so scared?
I just didn't think that I was ready, didn't have my openings ready. And then once you get there,
Yeah.
that just all goes away. And you just want to keep going.
Okay. Right. So you get there, you get to your first tournament. And was it a good time then? It sounds like it must have been.
Oh yeah, I loved it. And I lost so much. But I realized that the things that you lose small games in with, you will lose big games with too. You won't all of a sudden become better.
Interesting.
Like I
So,
just played in the Virginia closed, and I went, and there's also just some learn just some things you just learn about tournament play. Like I didn't recognize, I didn't know that about 90 plus 30 games, and then you get an hour extra. I didn't know that they automatically added onto your clock. So one game during that tournament, I was up the exchange and then a piece.
oh, wow.
And then I thought I had 2 minutes left, so I played like 10 moves, and then it was a dead even position.
Oh no.
So
Yeah.
I ended up doing that tournament 2.5 out of 6 instead of 3 out of 6.
So you didn't realize you were about to get a whole huge pile of time on top of that? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because otherwise I would have. It was so bad that the person I was playing, he was like, "Do you want to like go back and play those moves again?" I was like, "I don't think that's legally fair."
So what section did you enter for your first tournament?
Amateur.
Okay.
No, well, it was the under. Yeah, no, it was the amateur.
Okay, so it was like the like unrated section.
Yeah, I guess there wasn't really an unrated section. It was more like a under 1500 section.
Okay.
It was a my first tournament was a rapid tournament.
Oh, okay. How'd you end up doing in your first tournament?
What did I do? Did I do like 2 out of 5? I
Okay.
think I did like two out of five.
That's pretty good. Were you
Yeah,
happy
and
with that result, or were you unhappy with the result?
I was so pissed.
Oh no. Is it because you lost to some people who had like a lower rating than you on chess.com and you're all frustrated because you feel like you're better than them?
Yeah, and then I realized you just have to let go of that. Because
Yeah.
anybody can beat you. And then, yeah, I was so pissed. My second tournament, I went and I had two draws and one win. The next tournament I went to, I had two wins and one draw, one loss. And then this most recent one, two wins, a draw, and then three losses.
Okay.
And then the three losses were very in playing a sort of Virginia championship or just championship kind of tournament just completely changes your conception of the quality of games that you should be playing.
Gotcha.
Like in the game that I, one of the game one of the losses I found. It also changes your conception of the quality of moves that you can come up with. In one of the games I found I was losing. So I had the bishop versus rook endgame, but I was up. He had blundered a pawn. And I found the combination that was legitimate. It was a combination good. I thought that was good enough to be in a puzzle book.
Whoa, nice.
And it would have involved me essentially sacrificing a pawn because it would have been a pass pawn to then get a tempo on the king with check and then claim the rook afterwards.
Oh, wow.
So I would have just been winning. But I missed one move. I only needed to get my king out of the way of any potential checks.
Okay.
And the crazy thing was, the kid who I was playing, he saw this. He saw the same moves that I did.
Yeah.
And this was like a four move combination.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But he saw, I mean, he even noted that if you had moved the king, it would have worked.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, that's tough. Yeah, that's next level chess right there. And so what's your USDF rating then coming out of these recent tournaments?
Now it's like 11-14. I've only played, I think, 20 games.
Okay.
But yeah, it's like 11-14. I haven't been able to play many people much better than me.
Yeah.
And then the one game that I was going to win against a 1500, I was winning. But then there was no increment in the end game. So I was a rook over, I was up a rook for a rook for a bishop in the end game. And then I touch moved my rook and put it on pre and lost the game. But I was winning. And that would have been my largest win up to that point.
Yeah. And are those losses like that even more devastating over the board? Do they really stick with you more?
Oh yeah, I perseverated on that for a long time.
Yeah, those are brutal. I played a guy recently and he was like, yeah, remember we played like 3 months ago? And I was like, I don't remember the game. He's like, you won a rook and then you won. And I was like, see, that's why I don't remember. If I do something cool, I don't remember. If I had lost my rook, then I would remember. So it's kind of interesting for me. I can remember the losses quite well. The wins kind of blur together at some point.
Yeah, I feel weirdly cursed, and I very strongly remember the wins.
Oh, nice. Okay, I wish I could remember my wins.
Like, if I thought it was cool, I'm one of the best players there's ever been.
There you go. That's the game you need to go back and look at regularly. You're like, look at me go. Look at how good I am. All right, well, do you have any goals in chess then? It sounds like you've made just tons of progress in your journey. I guess, are you happy with the progress you've made? Are you like so many chess players out there where no amount of progress can satisfy you? How are you feeling these days?
I think definitely acknowledging where I've come from makes it a lot easier to keep going because I started off at basically around like 600. But in the way I see it, I think I'd like to be, when I first started playing, my goal was to be as good or to be able to beat the guy who I was playing with at the time, who was around where I'm at now.
Oh, okay.
And now I'm not even in any sort of satisfied.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't think satisfaction is really a place. I think it's just a way of being. And I think it's important to, for me especially, to just enjoy the journey.
Okay.
And I have milestones, but I think I just love the game enough to have goals, but also enjoy the journey more than the destination. And I'm 30 now. I'd say in 10 years, I'd love to be a national master level player, which I feel like isn't a crazy goal. If I put in the work, it is kind of crazy because, you know, adult improvers are, you know, they don't do well. But
I'm with you.
In 10 years, if I somehow acquire the funds to get a coach, because I never had one.
Okay.
And acquire the funds to get a coach and make it so that it's more regular for me to be able to play tournaments, which I've tried to make a good job of doing this year. I think I played four. Whereas before the year before, I played one.
Okay.
Or none. Then I think it's possible. I just need to be able to get the volume of games in, and then the practice. But I think my current plan with the use of pop books, working on my end games, and really deciding what my strengths are going to be as a player. I think getting to the level of being at the national master level would be decent.
Yeah, and it seems reasonable, right? A 10-year window, working hard. That seems like a reasonable goal. I'll be rooting for you.
Thank you. I'm going to need it.
All right, Will. Well, thanks so much for coming on and sharing your story. It sounds like you have had tremendous success. You've got reasonable goals. You're enjoying the journey. You're working hard. I can't help but think you're going to continue climbing and improving your chess. So if people want to get a hold of you, Will, what's the best way for them to contact you?
I'm on Twitter at, I think my Twitter handle is just Will, but it's Will Plays at Will Plays D4.
Okay.
It was Will Plays E4, but then I switched and then I did Defactual. And then on chess.com, my chess handle is Double Up on the Bubble Up. Okay. Inspired by Ben Feingold.
Nice. Okay. Excellent. All right. Well, if you want to reach out to Will, now you know where to go. And for all of you out there, I hope this is that week where you can make the ratings gains you want. If not, let's take Will's approach. Let's enjoy the journey. Sometimes you get stuck between 12 and 1300 for a long time. It happens. I'll see y'all next time, everybody. Have a good one.